AD, University of Maryland Terrapins. Let's welcome back to the show, Damon Evans. Damon, good morning. How are you feeling today?
Man, I'm feeling all right, fellas. I have no complaints as of now.
And that's awesome, and I hope you're feeling that same way about 4 o'clock Saturday in Bloomington, Indiana, which we'll get to. But four games in, you're 3-1. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the Michigan State loss, which sucked. But Ty Felton's been outstanding. So your assessment of the teams, Damon, the team, four games into the year at 3-1.
Well, you know, I like to be a perfectionist. We've done some really good things. Obviously, I think Billy Edwards is playing at a high level. Ty Felton is just blowing the roof off of it with what he's done. I don't know, maybe 41 catches for 604 yards, and we're only four games into the season. Unbelievable stats. So I've seen some things that I like on both sides of the ball. But I also am realistic. There are some things that we have got to clean up. We've got to clean up some of our penalties. We've got to make sure that we're solid and on the special teams of giving up the onside kick the past week. And when you're starting to play competition in the Big Ten, it's the little things that can catch up to you. So we need to clean some of the little things up. And I believe if we clean up areas and learn from some of the mistakes that we made, we will be fine. But we just got to continue to improve and go into Indiana knowing that this is not going to be an easy game. We're an underdog here. It's going to be challenging, but we also need to take care of business on the road.
And you mentioned the Indiana game, and Maryland's won three in a row against the Hoosiers. But last year around this time, Maryland off to the great start, started losing games that they, air quotes, Damon, should have won. Has that philosophy changed for this game especially? It's like, hey, look, we're expected to lose. How do you go in there? Because Indiana's the undefeated team, and maybe the bullseye's on them. How does Maryland go in there and just kind of take care of business and, you know, get out of there and then come back home for Northwestern and USC?
Well, I look at it this way. The bullseye is on us. We've lost. We're 0-1 in the conference right now. And falling to 0-2 is a terrible hole to be in. So we need to understand that, that there is pressure on us to make sure that we go in and handle our business. And we got to take care of what we are taught to do. We've got to have a good strategy going into the game. And we got to make sure that we're mentally sound. I believe that we've got great talent. But what happens to teams at times are the mistakes that are made. More specifically, when you make mistakes in crucial third down situations or you put yourself in a position to take points off of the board. I believe that we have a really good football team here at the University of Maryland. But like any team, we're not at a point right now where we can overcome some of the mistakes that we've made. So we've got to play very, very sound. We've got to make sure that we're in position and continue to fight the entire game. And the word that I'm going to use is consistency. We got to play a complete football game and be consistent across the board.
I think the best way to do that, Damon, when we used to have our staff meetings at Notre Dame with Lou Holtz, first thing, like all the position coach, all right, fundamentally, how many times like a D lineman did he get his shoulders turned or didn't keep square? And then mental errors. And Lou always used to say, you have more than five mental errors in the game, you're going to lose. And to me, that's kind of what I'm hearing, what you're saying.
Yeah, mental errors. We can't make mental mistakes. You've got to focus. You got to know what situation is. When you've got third and less than a yard and you're going up to the line, we can't have an illegal procedure. We got to know where we're lined up and what our role and our responsibilities are. I've said this to the team. Sport is a game of inches. And we've got to make sure that we understand that and we're responsible for the inches that fall underneath us. And stepping over stride one way or not being in the right position in another can hurt the entire team. So the mental aspect and the mental approach to the game is just as important as the physical.
Hey, Damon, I see this as a big swing game here. I mean, you go win that one, you know, then you got Northwestern. And to me, the momentum you can gain. And then if Indiana stays undefeated, you know, then it's like kind of like last year, losing to Northwestern and some of those people that you feel like you're as good as or better than.
This is a big game for us, and let's make no mistake about it. I believe this team will get it done. I believe we have all the ability in the world to do it. We just have to execute. And I think we need to remind ourselves, it's always still better to go into an open week with a win than with a loss, because you don't want to be sitting around stewing for 2 weeks until your next game. So we just got to go to Indiana, stay focused, take care of business. And if we do that, we'll come out on the right side of this. We've got the talent. We've got the scheme. The players are there. But this is a team game, and this is a game that requires a high level of mental fortitude. And we've got to have that in order to win these games on the road.
Damon Evans, Athletic Director, University of Maryland, joining us here, 105.7 The Fan, Maryland, Indiana. You can hear it on this station coming up, kickoff at noon on Saturday. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, getting away from the Terps, but certainly college football related. UNLV's quarterback, Matthew Sluka, he bails. A certain representations were not met, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a Maryland thing, but it's certainly a landscape of college sports thing. Damon, as an AD, you see this story. What's going through your mind right now?
Well, we discussed it this morning. I mean, lessons learned from these types of things. We've got to make sure that whatever we're doing on our end, that we're doing it in the right manner. I believe that if you say you're going to do something, you've got to do it. Don't overextend yourself. I don't know what happened out at UNLV, so I don't want to comment there. I don't know any of that. But what we do know is that kids have a lot of say-so nowadays and make determinations and do things that are best for them. And I just want to make sure that we put our athletics department, our student athletes, and our programs in the best possible position to have success. So again, don't want to comment because I don't know the details out at UNLV. You can only read or hear what you hear, but we just got to make sure that we're doing things in the right manner and hopefully avoid those types of situations.
Hey, Damon, there's other things other than football going on. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, the basketball schedules were released. Excited about that. You know, basketball, when you're talking about our women's basketball program around here, and Brenda Fries, it's exceptional. The men's schedule and Kevin Willard going into year three. We've got a good home slate on the men's side. I think we got Ohio State coming in, UCLA, and Minnesota and some others. And then we got some good non-conference games with Marquette on November 15th. And then we have Villanova and Newark and Syracuse and Brooklyn. And it was just announced for the women. We've got a great group of programs coming in. I'm thinking about Juju Watkins and USC coming here and UCLA, a Sweet 16 team. I think USC was an Elite Eight team. And then we just announced yesterday that our women's basketball team is going to play in the Coretta Scott King Classic in New Jersey against Texas, a game that's going to be on Big Fox on the MLK Day. So I think that's significant. And then you guys, to round it out, number five field hockey is off to a good start at 5-2. We host number one Northwestern this week. Men's soccer is back where they should be in the top 25, coming in at number 19 with a 4-1-3 record. Volleyball's on a 7-game winning streak, and so some good things are happening. But I love to win, fellas, and I know our fans love to win, and we got to continue to do so.
Damon Evans, Athletic Director, University of Maryland. It is Woman Crush Wednesday. Damon, so who we jamming to? Female artist or band, as we let you get on with the rest of your busy day here.
You know what? Let's hear Survivor by Destiny's Child.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I like that one.
I'm a survivor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That was a cave-in song.
That's Vinny's favorite song. He's a big dancer over there, Damon Evans. Damon Evans, Athletic Director, University of Maryland. Enjoy Bloomington. Bring back a W. We'll talk to you next week.
Good luck, Damon.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Damon Evans, everybody. We'll come back. How about Vinny's film study of the Ravens' offense? For three quarters, they were dominant. They were effective. They were efficient. Then maybe got conservative. Vinny's going to explain why. And then coming up at 11:30, the AFC North Report. Talking Browns, talking Bengals, talking Steelers. Orioles go to the playoffs for the second straight year, trying to secure that top wild card. And who knows, maybe miracles will happen. They could possibly win the American League East, right? I don't know. That's why they played again.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Games.
Breaking down every last second of game tape for Sunday's matchup.
Who's your connection?
You sound like a cop to me.
Who's your connection?
Enter Vinny's Film Room on 105.7 The Fan.
All right, Ravens, 1-2, 28-25 over the Dallas Cowboys. It was 28-6 at what point heading into the fourth quarter. Then things got a little haywire. We'll get to the defense later in the show. But, Benny, why were things so good for three quarters at least for this Ravens offense against Big D?
Yeah, I think that the game plan was outstanding. I thought the game plan going in was really good. I mean, we saw it on the first play of the game. And the start of the third quarter was, you know, the fake inside and Lamar running on the outside, you know, and everybody's jumping Derrick Henry on the inside. So to me, that was good. And the against Cleveland, Dallas had six sacks. All right. So, you know, your O-line's going to struggle if they drop back and throw it. If you're going to drop back and throw it 30 times, you're playing right into Dallas's hands. And Dallas struggles against the run. So, the Ravens, what do? They run it 45 times, and to stop a pass rush, best thing to do for an O-line, run the football. And that was, Falele looked like a player, finally. Falele looked like a player in the run game stuff. He came off better. That's the best I've seen him move since he's been a Raven. Athletically moving and being able to combo up to the linebackers. Even his pulling, you know, was better. He just looked, I don't know if the light came on. He's in better shape. He lost some weight. I don't know what it was, but his movement in the run game was much better, and he was getting his hands on people. He actually, in the run stuff, he played well. You know, he had a winning grade in the run stuff. Now, in the pass stuff, he still struggles in the pass stuff. And you know, the other line, I thought Voorhees was the worst one in the run game. Voorhees was on, as athletic as he is, he was on the ground way too much. Way too much. And like when he pulls and stuff, you know, he's not, he doesn't play physical, Bob. He doesn't knock anybody off. He doesn't get any movement. And to me, he needs to get better, because I thought in the run game, he was the worst old lineman of them all. And in the pass stuff, they played it smart. They protected the O-line. And, you know, you want to talk about, you know, tight ends and receivers, why they didn't throw the ball. They didn't need to. I mean, they were getting chunk runs. And, you know, when you drop back to throw, you know, you're having issues a lot of the times. I thought Bateman ran really good routes. The one for the touchdown was a really, really nice route that he ran, caught the ball well, and they made plays when they had to offensively. You know, in the second half, they just didn't have the ball. The missed field goal. I mean, their first drive, they get a touchdown. You know, so they take it down. Then the missed field goal was the next drive. And then Dallas had the ball two times in a row after that. Then they get the drive again, you know, after the onside kick. And that's where the incompletion was to Mark Andrews. And I showed you a picture. Zay Flowers was wide. I mean, something wasn't right there, because Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews are too close together. So something wasn't right on the route. But if he'd have just dumped it, likely would have been big. But I still think you're sitting third and two or third and three, whatever it was, and the clock's running, you want to eat clock, run it twice.
Yeah.
You've run it 45 times, just keep hammering 22. So that was – otherwise, they moved the ball. I mean, they scored all the time. Dallas really never stopped them. So I think offensively, I mean, they had over 430 yards. So offensively, it was pretty good. The problem was the missed field goal was the biggest problem. That changed everything in the game, the missed field goal. So, but Bob, I mean, this is a team that is number one in the league in offensive yards. 430 yards a game. You know, and they're number two in rushing with 203 yards a game. Green Bay's the only one. And they're like seventh in pass. And their points has gone up a little bit now to 26. So, to me, they're getting better offensively. And I think they're getting a better feel for what they can and can't do. You know, and Andrews has not been a big part of things. You know, he's been, but nobody was.
Yeah.
The running backs caught it. I mean, to me, you know, I mean, if you got a couple targets in that game, you know, that was a bonus to you.
Yeah, Andrews, 8 targets on the year, as we talked about Monday or yesterday, and likely has 16, but most of those
11.
He had 11 in
that in the Kansas City game. So, yeah, I mean, offense, I think they're, and to me, Lamar is, you know, I think he's playing exceptionally well. He's playing really well. And if it wasn't for Lamar, they don't win that game. They lose that game because he closed it out. I mean, they tried to give it to Henry. He slips, falls, but, you know, and they can't get anything handed it to Henry. And then they need Lamar to make 2 plays in that game at the end to close it out, and he did.
It's 88-81-057 The Fan. When we come back, we're going to have the AFC North report. Scott Petrak, Brown Zone, talk about the Browns. Richard Skinner from WKRC, Local 12, Cincinnati's 0-3, but the Steelers are 3-0. Will Graves, AP, talks about that. Later on, around 1 o'clock, actually, we got NFL lunch, but it's going to be film study of the defense. Now, as the offense was acceptable, defense, especially in the fourth quarter, probably a little on the unacceptable side. Yeah. Stay tuned for that. Orioles go to the playoffs second straight year, trying to secure that top wild card spot. We'll get into that. And more. We got the whip around coming up later on in this hour. So it's a busy Wednesday. You want to join us, you can. It's 410-583-1057. It's Vinny, Andy, Nolan on the Fan. Let's bounce around the division, and we'll start it off in Cleveland from brownzone.com. Talk about the 1-2 Cleveland Ball Club. Let's welcome back Scott Petrak. Scott, always great to talk to you. Cleveland sits here at 1-2, both losses at home. What has been the most frustrating part of this early slide here, especially in your own dojo?
Yeah, there's a lot of frustrating things. The 0-2 at home after going 8-1 at home a year ago is up there. I would say, though, the protection, Deshaun Watson's getting hit way too often. It was 17 times against Dallas, 17 times against the Giants. He was sacked 14 times combined in those games. You know, it's not all the offensive line, but plenty of it is the offensive line. They got to get that figured out because, you know, Deshaun Watson has his own issues, but they're exacerbated when he's getting hit all the time.
Hey, Scott, when you just evaluate things and stuff, I mean, Cleveland's a bad football team right now.
Yeah, that's probably fair to say. I mean, they haven't scored 20 points in a game. He hasn't thrown for 200 yards in a game. The defense, I think, is still really talented, but it gave up 21 points in the first half against the Giants. And 7 of those came late, and it was a short field after a strip sack. But still, the Giants, who are a flawed team with a flawed quarterback, went on 2 long touchdown drives, and the Browns couldn't get off the field. And, you know, then they played great in the second half, but it didn't matter because they had dug a big hole. So, yeah, nothing. Even the good parts aren't working good enough, and the bad parts are still pretty bad.
How bad are Myles Garrett's feet?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, he was limping really bad during the game. He was limping bad after the game. I know this, that if he can play, he's going to play, and I think he'll still play at a high level. He had a great, for whatever it's worth, PFF grade after the Giants game, and he was hobbled pretty much the whole game. He got a lot of pressure on Daniel Jones. He had 3 hits, a bunch of pressures, drew a holding call. So they need him to be healthier because then he can play more, and we know how dominant he is. So there's hope that they kind of calm down and is he rests some during the week that he can feel better. But I don't know if that's just wishful thinking. I think we got to see how this plays out. It was good news that the MRI he got Monday came back clean enough that they listed him as day-to-day and didn't have to, you know, sit him down for a week.
Scott Petrak, brownzone.com, joining us here, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Last thing for you, Scott, is it too early to talk about must-wins for Cleveland taking on the Raiders coming up this Sunday?
Yeah, you know, we have that discussion all the time in the media room, whether or not, you know, is it a must-win this early in the season? Probably not by its true definition. But this is a big game for the Browns. It's a winnable game. They need to get back to 2-2, the easiest part of the schedule. They're in the easiest part of the schedule, and they're 1-2. So I'm not going to go must-win, but I'm going to go really important. And if they fall to 1-3, I don't know where the bottom could be.
Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com. Scott, always great to talk to you. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott Petrak, everyone. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Let's move on to Cincinnati, talking about the Bengals from WKRC. What's up, Mr. Carlson? Local 12. Let's bring in Richard Skinner. Richard, thanks for joining us here in Baltimore. And 0-3 for the Bengals. Nobody saw this one coming. Is Joe Burrow 100% healthy? It looks like that zip on the fastball isn't what it used to be so far.
No, he's close. And, you know, that was certainly watchable during camp. It was a little bit noticeable in the opener where, you know, it looked like he was taking checkdowns way too often. And the question was raised, is he taking checkdowns because he doesn't trust himself to throw it into tight windows? And that got answered a little bit in Kansas City. And then he hits a couple of deep balls to Jamar Chase the other night. So I would say at the moment, he's the least of their worries. They got other issues across the board.
Hey, Richard, what's going on with that defense?
That's a great question. You know, I wrote a piece on our website after the Kansas City game that, hey, maybe this defense is getting back to the point of at least mid-level where, you know, they don't have to win games 34-31 all the time. And, you know, they held Patrick Mahomes to 151 yards and really, you know, stopped him and stopped that Kansas City offense. They held him 19 points because they scored 7 on a scoop and score. And it looked like after the first two games, okay, the defense is at least back to the level that got them to the championship game, got them to a Super Bowl, where the offense does the rest. And then Monday night came, and it was an absolute train wreck. Part of it is they were starting what would amount to their fifth and sixth defensive tackles, who probably wouldn't even be active on game day if not for injury, and they did nothing in that game. Sam Hubbard has been a staple in that defensive line. Coming off surgery to his ankle, hurt his knee in camp. He says he feels fine, but he looked honestly washed up the other night. Couldn't get any pressure. The secondary was a mess. Both Cam Taylor-Britt and Dax Hill, the corners, got beat over the top in man coverage for touchdowns. Geno Stone has not played great. He hasn't played awful, but he hasn't played great. Von Bell, they got back, you know, as a free agent. And Von certainly helped with communication, getting guys in the right place. But Von looks like a 31-year-old safety trying to play. And so all of a sudden you look up and they're a mess. And the unfortunate part is some of their recent drafts have not added very good depth pieces, and they're really at a crossroads.
Hey, Richard, tell us about Andre Lasivas.
Yoshibosh.
Yoshibosh.
When we first met him, I thought it was Iosivas.
That's better than what me and Bob tried to say it was.
You just call him AI.
Exactly. We just call him Dre. It makes it a lot easier for everybody. Yeah, he's been a nice third wide receiver. They've leaned a little bit more into multiple tight end sets with two wide receivers, and the two that would be on the field the most, obviously, are T. Higgins, who they just got back, and Jamar Chase. But he's been a real good target in the red zone. Had two touchdown receptions against Kansas City, had another one the other night, had a knack for it last year. He had, I think, 14 or 16 catches last year, and four of those were for touchdowns. So he's become a nice third receiver, but not as much. He's not on the field as much as a Tyler Boyd would be as a third receiver. They're trying to lead more into multiple tight end sets, and it's the last 2 weeks it's worked very efficiently for him.
Richard Skinner, WKRC, local channel 12 there in Cincinnati. You got Cincinnati at Carolina. You got Andy Dalton, touching reunion, I'm sure. 0-3 getting to the playoffs. Odds are slim. 0-4, almost impossible. What's the DEFCON level going into this game right now for the Bengals?
You know, 5 is the max. I think they're at DEFCON 7 at the moment. I mean, this is, you know, the whole mantra when the schedule came out was, oh, boy, they gave you an easy first month, 3-1 at a minimum. And, you know, the Chiefs game, you could chalk it in the loss column, but it was kind of a toss-up and played that way out. But you look, you went, New England's going to be one of the worst teams in the league. Washington's going through a rookie quarterback. Carolina's going to be one of the worst teams in the league. They handed you 3-1 with Baltimore coming here in the first Sunday in October, and what a showdown that will be. Well, now, honestly, more for the Bengals, because I think the Ravens have righted the ship, to be honest with you. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. It's your town and your team. But, you know, I think their issues are less than what the Bengals' issues and the Browns' issues are by a long shot. You know, even if you go beat Carolina, you almost have to must beat Baltimore here. You know, they were 1-5 against the division last year. They almost have to go 5-1 to climb themselves back into this. And as you guys know, that's a big ask in this division, going 5-1 for anybody.
Richard Skinner, WKRC, Local 12, Cincinnati. Richard, appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Richard.
All right, take care. Thank you.
And let's move on now to the first place team in the AFC North. They're undefeated. Their quarterback is redeeming himself because he was basically ran out of Chicago. Let's talk about the first place Steelers from the Associated Press. He's on video at 81.057 The Fan. He is Will Graves. And Will, we appreciate the time. 3-0 is awesome. I know the Highsmith injury is quite the setback for them defensively, which we'll get to. But watching Justin Fields through the first 3 weeks compared to what you saw at training camp, what's the difference here?
He's just avoiding mistakes. I think, the win over the Chargers on Sunday was sort of the platonic ideal of a Mike Tomlin game. Two teams slugging it out for 45 minutes. In the last 15, the Steelers just kept leaning on the Chargers and leaning on them, and eventually they sort of collapsed. And Fields, look, he kind of was a game manager the first couple weeks, but he was a difference maker against the Chargers. 25-32, 245, threw for a touchdown, ran for a touchdown, made one ill-advised throw that turned into a pick. But for a guy that had 41 turnovers in 40 games with the Bears, he has one in three games with the Steelers, and that is a ratio that Pittsburgh can definitely live with.
Talk about the addition of Arthur Smith.
Well, he's philosophically, it wasn't a sexy hire. Because, look, this is a team that has obviously struggled to score points, even in the late stages of Ben Roethlisberger's career, right? And you bring in Arthur Smith, who's, had a dynamic run game, a dynamic unit when he was the OC in Tennessee, but, he had prime Derrick Henry, right? And Najee Harris is pretty good, but he isn't Derrick Henry. That being said, it's starting to play out sort of exactly like the Steelers want. They're rugged. They couldn't really run the ball those first three quarters against the Chargers, but then when they had to late, they could. That is a hallmark of an Arthur Smith offense, and I think you're going to see, and we started to see it last week, things starting to open up a little bit as Fields gets more comfortable. As they got three first-year starters on the offensive line, basically. So it is a promising start, but a long way to go to think that they can, if they get into a shootout, which seems unlikely given the state of the defense at the moment, they might be a little more equipped than they've been in recent years to hang in there.
Now, the Highsmith injury, how's that going to affect Watt?
Not that much. They really like what they have in Nick Herbig. He's a second-year guy out of Wisconsin. He had two sacks after Highsmith went out. He had a dynamite preseason. He's not that big. So what they're going to do is, I think on pass rushing downs, you're going to see Herbig in there opposite Watt. And then on run downs, first, second down situations, you're going to see DeMarvin Leal, who is they drafted as a defensive end, but has become sort of a hybrid and really almost like played himself out of the league last year, was a healthy scratch most of the season last year, but has gotten his act together in his third year. So they're going to rotate those. TJ will probably play a little bit more, but I think they are so confident that Herbig is a good complement to TJ, and the fact that Leal has matured as a player, I would see them keeping TJ in the 80 to 85% snap range as opposed to ramping it up to 100%.
Will Graves covers the first place Pittsburgh Steelers for the Associated Press at Indy. Real quick, Will, the key to stopping Jonathan Taylor is going to be what?
Tackling him. He gashed them last year. In fact, that was their last regular season loss. They have a 6-game winning streak, dating back to last year. The last loss was at Indy on a Saturday where they just looked – it was Mitch Trubisky's last start with the Steelers. They looked totally outclassed defensively. They certainly looked better against the run. They faced some pretty good backs early. Bijan Robinson week one, J.K. Dobbins last week. So, they have played some dudes, but the thing about the Colts is sort of like what the Steelers are going to do. They're going to keep running even when they have trouble. And the only way that changes is if the Steelers somehow get a 2-3 touchdown lead, which I just don't think, this team is ready to. Look, they scored two touchdowns, and it was like, well, they could have scored a third if they hadn't nailed down in the last, minute and a half against the Chargers when they were inside the five. I just don't see the Steelers running away. So the Colts are going to keep pounding him, so the Steelers have to sort of stay consistent. But, look, they've gotten good stuff. Cam Hayward looks spry for a 35-year-old guy. Larry Ogunjobi is taking up space in the middle. You know, Patrick Queen, even former Raven, is starting to sort of figure things out, was quiet the first couple weeks, but was noticeable last week in the run game against the Chargers. Landon Roberts is a steady veteran presence in the middle there. So, like, if those two inside linebackers and the interior defensive line play the way they have, then the Steelers have a chance to kind of keep Taylor in check.
Will Graves, Associated Press, talking Steelers here on The Fan. Will, appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, take care.
There's Will Graves, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back. Got the whip around coming up. And then Rob Motti is going to be joining us from the Associated Press. We'll talk about the NFL through 3 weeks. Heading into week number 4, which starts tomorrow night, Cowboys and Giants. We'll count that money midweek style, buy or sell. And then Jim Hunter, longtime voice of the Orioles. Last time the Orioles made back-to-back playoff appearances was 96-97. Jim Hunter was there. We'll talk about this year's team getting healthy at the right time.
Brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. The best crab cakes in Harford County.
105.7 The Fan.
All right, time for a quick whip around, as they say. We talked about this with Damon Evans earlier in the hour. Matthew Sluka, he's the quarterback for UNLV. UNLV Rebels, who are 3-0. And he's a major part of their undefeated season. Transferred from Holy Cross.
Yep.
Said that there were some misrepresentations, if you will, in regards to his agreement to go out west. 3 games into the season, with what, San Jose State looming in a couple of days, he bails. Peace out. See you later. So the implication was that he was promised NIL dealings, Vinny, and I guess the Rebels or UNLV did not live up to said promises. So he just split. And Damon couldn't comment on that specific situation. But now you're beholden to contractual obligations, basically, it sounds like, with these kids.
Yeah. And Bob, you know, reading the article, it says it's not the first example of an NIL deal gone bad. Earlier this year, Georgia quarterback Jaden Rashada sued Florida State and others for $13.85 million over the failure to honor an NIL agreement.
Yeah, they had made a verbal.
Yeah.
Because I remember that one.
Well, you know what's funny, Bob, is this, because like when you mentioned it to Damon, he says, yeah, we were discussing that this morning.
It's like we, Johnny All-American will give you X, Y, and Z.
Right.
If we don't get it, then I guess
he's hitting
if
the
it's,
road.
And if it's in writing, I guess he has every legal recourse to
just
do so.
Just like a contract, right?
Yep. WNBA, not that we talk about that a lot, but the playoffs are going on. And I saw the Caitlin Clark game was the highest rated ESPN network playoff game in the history of the league.
They killed.
Liberty, they play tonight. Yeah. Liberty 91-82. Over the Dream. I know Nolan's all broken up about that. And then Vegas beat the Storm 83-76. Those two teams advance, winning the best of 3 in just 2 games. But Caitlin Clark's team, to your point, Vinny, up against it, against Alisa Thomas, former Terp.
It just seems like, Bob, every team that's winning, it's 2-0. You know, and like the good teams are head and shoulders above the bottom 4 teams. And I would be shocked if, you know, Indiana can beat Connecticut tonight, and I think they'll go, you know, unless Caitlin Clark goes for 35. She only had 11 the other night, and she didn't shoot the ball very well. So if she doesn't play big, they're not going to win.
And as the WNBA is coming to an end in the postseason, the NBA.
Yeah.
Celtics had media day yesterday, already having preseason hockey on the ice.
Yeah.
So the winter sports are well on our horizon.
Bob, you know what's funny about the, I was reading an article about the WNBA, and they said that they need Indiana to like extend, if they could beat Connecticut, it'd be the best thing for the WNBA because of
eyeballs.
The TV.
Yep. Yeah. 5881057 The Fan. It's the whip around here on this Woman Crush Wednesday, this day in Orioles history, 1973, Memorial Stadium. Jim Fuller hit 2 home runs. Rich Coggins 1 yard. Jesse Jefferson gets the win. Orioles, who had already clinched the East, just piling on, beating the Tigers 8-3. 2016, Oriole Park, Camden Yards. One of the big games of this wild card season. Hyun-Soo Kim hit a 2-run homer. Dylan Bundy got the win. Zach Britton got his 46 saves. Zach Britton's night 2016, one of the great years ever in the history of closers. But Hyun-Soo Kim, big two-run jack there. NFL 1977 at Shea Stadium. Colts, Baltimore Colts beat the Jets. Q. Don McCauley, two touchdowns. Rosie Leakes rushed for one. Baltimore improved to 2-0 on their way to the AFC East Championship. Their third straight, by the way. And then 2011, St. Louis, the Ravens. Was it Raymond James Stadium, I believe it was? St. Louis. Joe Flacco.
No, that was Tampa.
What's Edward Jones?
Yes.
With St. Louis.
Yeah.
The Dome. Joe Flacco throws three touchdown passes to Torrey Smith in the first quarter. Woo! Haloti Ngata. He returned a fumble for 28 yards and a TD as the Ravens blow out the Rams 37-17. I've said it before and almost say it again. The 2010-2011 Ravens were better than the 2012 Ravens that won the Super Bowl. But 11 was the Cundiff Lee Evans year. 2010 was the blown 14-point lead in Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown off the side of the helmet year. Didn't Bolden drop a pass? Anyway, we don't want to look at the past. But on this day, 13 years ago, Torrey Smith, his first three NFL touchdowns, a rookie at the time, out of Maryland. We'll come back, talk about the NFL 2024 going into week four. Rob Motti from the Associated Press will count that midweek dough, hopefully at 12:15, with buy or sell, talk about sports subjects. Jim Hunter talks about the Orioles clinching their second straight playoff berth and how dangerous, getting close to health, they're going to be in October. And then we got news from the Nets coming up at 12:45. Going to hear a little bit from John Harbaugh. Looking back at Monday's NFL lunch, we're going to have film study of the Ravens defense. And they won, but that fourth quarter felt like a loser to us.